and welcome to Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. As always, our conversations include you. And if you'd like to join us, the phone lines are open at 941-3689. Or if you call us from the neighbor islands or anywhere else you may be listening to the live stream, you can get to us at 877-941-3689. Now, there's probably a good chance you have a strong opinion about raising the minimum wage. A Washington Post ABC News poll in December found that two-thirds of Americans support a minimum wage increase. It's central to the national conversation. It could become a wedge issue come November. And in Hawaii, as in many other states which are considering or have already increased their minimum wage, it's also a hot debate. The arguments always seem to boil down to this: more cash in the hands of the lowest paid workers means more necessary spending power. Or conversely, if the minimum wage rises, more jobs will be lost and hurt the very people the raise was intended to help. There are signs on both sides, and tonight on Town Square, we're going to consider some of the longitudinal collection of studies drawn together in the research we began to talk about on The Conversation earlier this week with the executive director of UH Economic Research Organization, Carl Bonham. Joining us tonight is Sherry Minor McNamara, head of the Chamber of Commerce of Hawaii, and from the Appleseed Law Center, staff attorney Jenny Lee. And again, you too. The phone lines are open at 941-3689 on Oahu, and from the neighbor islands, 877-941-3689. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you. Thank you.
Now, this is a tough issue. It's a long, long battle. I mean, it goes back for decades. And here we are once again looking at it in Hawaii, whether or not some of those bills will actually survive this time around or not. Certainly doesn't mean that this conversation is going away. But lately, the conversation has changed just a little bit, Carl Bonham, with some of what you put out a little earlier this month that says that maybe those two ways of looking at this issue aren't necessarily as correct as we once thought they were. Let's recapitulate some of that just a little bit for anyone who might not have joined us earlier in the week on the conversation.
Well, it's certainly true that those two manners of looking at it are too simplistic. The way that minimum wages affect businesses and households and have their effects on poverty and et cetera are very, very complicated, and they differ from business to business and employee to employee. And what we were talking about and the blog post that we put out was really describing some of the newest research that has really come around since the year 2000 that sort of begins to change the way that economists look at the negative effects of raising minimum wages that may create job losses. And we talked on the conversation about a couple of meta studies, that one of them that looked at over 1,000 different estimates of how much jobs change for teenagers, restaurant workers, low-wage workers when you change the minimum wage. So they drew on studies going all the way back to 1972, and the conclusion was that essentially the effects are either so small that we can't measure them or they're zero. And there was another meta study that was conducted. I'm not sure it's actually published yet. I think it was from the Upjohn Institute. And that looked at only the studies, about 64 different estimates since 2000. And it found essentially the same thing. And so in the past, Yuhiro has written blog posts about, you know, this is not a good idea because it's not that effective at reducing poverty. It's, you know, there are more effective ways to do this, and it has negative effects. But the latest research is really, and the meta studies are kind of telling us that, you know, maybe those negative effects really aren't there.
Carl, as you look at those studies and from where they come, are you looking at all at who also has been funding those studies and how much bias there may be or not in any of them? Because we've seen that very recently, just the past couple of days in the New York Times, a lot of finger pointing about where some of these studies on both sides of the ledger are coming from and who's funding them to be able to give credence to their own perspectives.
So some of these, I believe both of the meta studies controlled for the authors. Now, that's not an exact replica for who's funding them, but it can be close. And I don't recall if they looked carefully in those meta studies at who was doing the funding. And most of what I'm reading in terms of the new literature, my sense, really in much of the old literature, and so we're not talking about I know the article you were referring to, the New York Times, and I actually went and started looking at some of the sources of the research I was reading to, you know, just because I read the New York Times article, and I'm reasonably confident that particularly the stuff that's coming out of University of Massachusetts and University of California, Berkeley, and other places, that these are academic studies.
I want to bring both Sherry and Jenny into the conversation because, Jenny, this is, you know, music to your ears. I can imagine that this is just validating a lot of the things that you've been saying for a very long time through Appleseed and various papers that Appleseed has put out.
Right. So first, I'm not an economist, but in terms of looking at this research and also what we've seen here in Hawaii, according to the Department of Labor and Industrial Relations, that there are not these reductions in jobs, and that if anything, and since the four times we've raised the wage since 2002 in Hawaii, we've actually seen job growth, according to the Department of Labor. So I think that this speaks to what we've seen empirically here, and that it also makes sense because when people are getting paid better wages, they can make ends meet. They're turning right around in spending that. So effectively, there is an impact on the economy. So these are the folks, they're not squirreling it away as assets. They have to go out and buy food, clothes, pay their bills, get gas for their car. It's something that they're going to turn around right away because the salary for a full-time minimum wage worker is just $15,080 a year. So that's the price of a cheap car, basically. We're really talking, that's $1,160 a month, which is the fair market rent for a studio apartment here in Hawaii. So these folks are ones that they will need to take every penny they make, it's going to go back into the economy.
Which now sort of puts a little bit pressure on the businesses that you represent, Sherry Minora McNamara, and what you've been hearing and the stance that the chamber has taken, which is this is not something that should happen now. Maybe at some point in the future we need to hike the wages, but at this point, with the way these bills are written, there are too many problems with it.
Right. So the chamber does understand that a minimum wage increase does have, you know, should happen at some point. But we are opposed to the current versions of the bills because we believe the wage increase is just too steep. I believe one of them is $3 in the next 3 years. The other one is, I believe, $2, 75 cents for the next 3 years. And so we believe those are too steep for business to take in a short time period. Number two, we're opposed tying wage to CPI, the Consumer Price Index, because it doesn't take into consideration the economic conditions and what the business's status is at that time. And third, both bills repeal the tip credit, and we believe the tip credit should be restored. And one thing I'd like to point out is that while there are a number of other states looking at increasing the minimum wage, Hawaii is somewhat different. We're the only state in the nation, the only state that provides prepaid health care for employees. And so if we look at the numbers on average, if you base it on a 30-hour per week at a $7.25, it's $3.42 for prepaid health care costs. So in actuality, total hourly cost would be about $10.67. If we increase it to $8.75, that's another $3.39 per hour for prepaid. That's $12.34 total hourly cost. And prepaid healthcare costs increase about 7 to 10% each year. And so those are significant costs. And so once again, Hawaii is the only state in the nation that provides prepaid healthcare. So while I understand Carl's explanation, you know, I just want to know if those studies also incorporate these additional costs which Hawaii has, which is the prepaid healthcare, and how that would impact the numbers.
And so, I mean, what Sherry is saying is absolutely correct. The I mean, when you do a national study and you look at the effects of changing the minimum wage, you know, most of those low-wage workers across the country historically have not had health care coverage, right? And or they've had minimal health care coverage. And so Hawaii is different in that respect. Of course, we have had the prepaid health care coverage for a long time. And the so the research that we're focusing, that I'm reading and describing, is really simply answering the question, if you raise the minimum wage, does it cause job losses?
And what's the effect on
the
poverty?
The finding is that wages go up, poverty goes down, and you don't see large losses of jobs in amongst teenagers, low wage workers, et cetera. And these are not studies just of Hawaii, so they can't, this is nationwide. And so you're right that healthcare coverage is a big deal.
Yeah.
And healthcare coverage has gone up in price. Cost, right? So the total expense to the employer has gone up despite the fact that the wage hasn't.
But many other costs go up to an employer too,
sure,
in terms of the cost of doing business. Her point seems to be, well, when you account for these benefits, which may be very unique, or not, which are unique to Hawaii and very much exclusive to the way we've been operating in the last, 25, 30 years, that those have to be accounted for separately. But Jenny, some people would say, well, you can't eat those benefits and you can't pay rent with those benefits because it's not hard, cold cash. It'd be like somebody giving you a box of food or something that perhaps you could or weren't going to use at that moment in time when you really needed to have something to pay your rent.
Absolutely. Well, first, families and workers, they do make those decisions every day about how they can make ends meet. So these folks, they've gotten by on very small incomes for a while. So there's a resourcefulness there. And exactly, that benefits or those kind of fringe benefits are not necessarily going to be sufficient to make that happen. But also, I'd like to note, according to the Department of Labor as well, that 84% of our minimum wage workers work more than 20 hours a week. That means that those employees are presumably eligible under the Prepaid Health Care Act. So that suggests to me that there's some interest an employer has in having a worker be there at least half time. 30% of all minimum wage workers work 35 hours a week per more. So they are already paying this, and they're doing that by choice. So I think this speaks, much like with minimum wage, the emphasis on how it benefits employers and businesses in terms of reducing turnover, attracting more highly skilled workers. You have healthy workers. They can actually show up on time and make come on a regular basis. So there's a lot of benefits to the Prepaid Health Care Act, as well as more solid wages for workers. But we've also seen that empirically. 84% are presumably eligible right now.
And her point is, well, they're already getting that. But if you bump up the minimum wage, they're still going to be having to pay for those benefits, the prepaid health care benefits. And then that means it's just going to be a higher cost regardless of that. But your point seems to be, and I think, Carl, you said this earlier in the week too, that when you take the body of that into consideration, that you create a stability for businesses where they're not having to deal with turnover rates, retreading rates, attracting new people, having to do recruitment because they've got people who are stable and appreciative and who are there on time. And that means that you can put a little bit more pressure on them to behave in a certain way or to, come in on time or have other a little bit more strident restrictions to how they're going to be operating when they're on the job. We've got a caller. If you'd like to join us, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. We're talking about the minimum wage. If you're a business owner, we want to hear from you. If you work for minimum wage, if you know someone who does, we want to hear from you too. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to Ralph calling us from Manoa. Aloha, Ralph. Welcome to Town Square.
Yeah, can you hear me? I'm in my car.
We can.
You can?
We can, yes. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Well, I just would like to say that I guess I can't turn my radio off without losing my feedback. But what I'd like to say is that I think that you could go all the way back to...
Ralph, excuse me. I'm going to have to interrupt you. Can you just turn down the volume on your radio there?
I got to turn my car off here. I pulled over.
Oh, even better. Even better. That makes me feel so much better. Thank you.
It doesn't work with a speakerphone in the car. Anyway, I think you can go all the way back to the worst war the United States has ever had, the slavery war, the Civil War, and that was all about the very elite people saying that they couldn't survive without slavery. And this is just I can't even believe we're having this conversation to deny people a living wage that work hard every day, that work as hard as some of the CEOs. It's just, to me, almost unconscionable that we can still be, just because these people control think tanks and give so much money, control Congress people, that they can constantly get their way. Let's increase the minimum wage. It hasn't been increased in a long time. Let's get people out there spending their money and enjoying some of the bounty that America was supposed to be about, rather than globalization has allowed us to push this money up, up, up. And it's not just the low-paid people.
Ralph, I'm going to stop you right there because you brought in a whole lot of different arguments for this. Let's just take it apart a little bit, and thanks very much for the call. All right, he's making a moral argument. He's saying, look, we live in the country in which we live. We have, as he put it, bounty, that they should be sharing in some of this bounty. But, Jenny, you're the first one to say that we're not talking about bounty here. We're talking about basics.
Absolutely. Even the best bill that we have, Senate Bill 2609, which is to go to $10.10, that's still not a living wage. And we've actually received a lot of criticism for that. Why aren't we asking for a minimum wage, which is going to look more like $15 for the Honolulu area? And we know that it's not going to meet that, but it's critical that we take this step because our workers are going into 8 years of not having an increase in their wages. And we have seen increased growth in Hawaii. We've seen average wages go up by over 12%. So there is a prosperity to be shared, and we can afford to do it. This is a good market. This is a strong economy right now. So if now's not the time to do it, we're not ever going to get this done in a down market. So we really need to take this and stop letting our workers keep sliding backwards, losing ground in terms of their buying power. Because if you work full time, and many of these minimum wage workers hold down 2-3 jobs, work 60 plus hours a week, you should be able to put food on the table without having to rely on government assistance or charity. You are a worker. You're contributing to our economy, and our service sector workers are critical. This is something that it's about dignity. It's about fairness, a fair day's pay for a fair day's work.
When you hear her say that, Sherry, and obviously there's a great deal of passion there and a great deal of information and research behind what she has to say, this is a much more upmarket than we've seen in a long time. She's saying, if not now, when? And why not create some stability for people who really need it, plus the fact that we have a moral argument that our caller brought up? How do you answer them?
Right, we certainly understand. And as I mentioned earlier, the chamber does understand that at some point we need to increase the minimum wage. But once again, what can businesses handle? Businesses want to take care of their employees. They pay good wages, many times above minimum wage. They pay for other benefits. And the minimum wage also is not just the actual wage increase, but everything else tied to it, payroll tax, unemployment insurance tax, TDI, workers' comp, they're all tied to the wage. And so if the wage goes up, everything else goes up significantly. My mom has a small business. I remember at some point she had 8 employees. Now she's down to 1.5. She put her 3 kids through college. It wasn't easy. There are so many times where she couldn't give herself a paycheck because she wanted to make sure she took care of her employees. So there's a lot of small business out there that want to take care of their employees and want to give when they can. In fact, for my own team, if I could give them an increase every year, I would, because they work hard. They're a great team. And so it's not to say that business don't want to get an increase. It's a matter of, can they handle the increase? And so, with this significant increase, there will be a cutback in hours, reduced benefits, and limit of the hiring of employees. And I wanted to go back to some of the data that Carhan mentioned, and this is not a longitudinal evaluation, but there is data pointed to job growth for all sectors during the minimum wage increase of 2006 and 2007. But there's also data that shows that job growth doesn't cut across all industries and pay levels. In fact, when you look at the BLS stats from 2006 and 2007, when there was a minimum wage increase, certain categories of food workers who earn close to minimum wage experienced job loss. So once again, this is just a snapshot, but it does, you know, I wanted to deliver that message because it provides another perspective to some of the numbers that are being presented out there.
So Sherry, I mean, going back to your point that from what you are hearing from your members, that they would like to be able to have a minimum wage increase at some point. What does that point look like for them, if not now?
Well, if it's this year, once again, the bills that are proposed, those are, we believe, too steep.
But if your members are saying, okay, this bill doesn't do it, this is too steep, we'd like to do it at some point in time, as you mentioned a moment ago, when would that time be? What conditions would have to exist for that to be able to make it the right time to do it? What would a bill have to look like for you guys?
Right. So if the legislature's inclination is to pass a bill to increase the minimum wage this session, we'd like to ask them to take into consideration the cost impact of these steep increases. Because we believe the House and Senate versions, which I mentioned earlier, I believe 75 cents for the next 3 years, and a Senate version, 95 cents for the next 3 years, just way too steep. Just basic math, if you take a 10-employee office, and take into consideration the almost $3 per hour increase, that's almost $57,000 per year that would increase.
And you're not accounting for all these other things that go into workman's comp and TDI and the rest of it.
That's strictly wage. Doesn't incorporate prepaid and all the other mandates and benefits, along with taxes and property. So once again, going back, business want to take care of their employees. And we understand there needs to be an increase. We just ask that in the current versions, they take into consideration the wage increase, the proposed wage increases, as well as tying it to the CPI and then repealing the tip credit.
All right. We're going to talk about the tip credit separately in a moment. We've got some callers on the line. If you'd like to join us, 941-3689, if you're on Oahu, that's the number to call. And if you're on the Neighbor Islands or somewhere else listening to the live stream, get to us at 877-941-3689. Going to Michael, calling us from Makakilo. Aloha, Michael. Thank you for your patience.
Hi. When we talk about minimum wage, we have to understand that when we pay the employee minimum wage, it's the taxpayers that are actually subsidizing the rest of these companies and businesses because they cannot survive on minimum wage. They get food stamps, Section 8 housing. If we gave them a living wage, there'd be more money in the economy, more people would be spending things, there'd be less strain on our safety net and less requirement for taxes at that point. So we would be able to give those tax credits to the businesses if we, the taxpayers, were not subsidizing their employees. Plain and simple.
All right. Thank you, Michael, for hanging on and for bringing us that. I saw your head this nod on this, Carl, as we've talked about this a little bit before.
He raises some valid points.
It's how you cut the pie.
Yes, sir, that's right. And not to dismiss what Michael was saying, but I wanted to jump back on some of the data that was being – so both of my fellow guests have talked about data on Hawaii and how it was changing during our previous minimum wage changes. And basically, you can't tell from looking at that data one way or another whether changing the minimum wage has an effect on employment because you're not controlling for everything else that was happening at the time. And so we don't know if, you know, 07, 08, 09, raising the minimum wage here had any effect on employment. It could have been positive, could have been negative.
So are you saying that coincidence is not causality?
Well, it's one – I mean, so the criticism of the research on minimum wage, some of the original path-breaking research is often that it's just a case study. You're only looking at one example. And in this case, we're only looking at, you know, a few data points, and we're not even trying to control for what else was going on in the economy at the time.
Which is why you were looking back at some of that data that was going – well, all the way and, back to doing advanced, the meta-studies.
And why the advanced, the recent research is looking at data over the entire country. In some cases, it's looking at contiguous counties where you have different minimum wages in the two different counties, and you gather up, you know, over 1,000 different counties and look at what happens as their minimum wages change over time.
All right, we're going to go now to Biff calling us from Nuuanu. Biff, are you there?
Hi, this is Biff. Can you hear me?
Yes, aloha. Welcome to Town Square.
Thank you. You know, there's good cases for and against and how much the minimum wage should go up. But most businesses will survive by increasing prices of their products and taking austerity measures. Because businesses increase their prices, the cost of living in Hawaii will increase. And that affects all of us as a special interest group. Is there a way to minimize the cost of living increases for all of us? And I believe there is. 19 years ago, I managed restaurants, and I know of a waitress at that time who earned $180 a day in tips on a seven-hour shift. That's $26.41 an hour. With 19 years of price increases in menus, a 2.75% CPI increase, she would be earning about $43 an hour today, plus her minimum wage. Many of today's minimum wage earners are tipped earning workers. Should this group of well-paid tipped employees get an increase in the minimum wage pay? Are we willing to increase the cost of living in Hawaii by mandating a higher wage for these well-paid earners? The solution would be to increase the allowable employee tip credit adjustment for employers to whatever amount the minimum wage ends up going up. Everyone wins.
All right, Biff, you brought up the point. Ooh. We're getting some really nasty feedback. Sorry about that, Biff. It happens sometimes. But he brings up the point about the tip credit. I want us to move to that and to talk about that a little bit. But before we do, even if someone is in or the restaurant, working for a restaurant, it doesn't necessarily mean that they are going to be getting a tip. You've got people at the back of the house who perhaps aren't. Maybe they're, you know, in the kitchen, they're a dishwasher, and they're not going to be able to have, you know, a participation with those tips. Maybe they're not shared. That's been where some of the rub has been, that it's not really affecting everybody, and that those groups need to be broken out, those who are, you know, getting tips and those who are not. You're nodding at me again, Carl.
Well, I mean, I have personal experience with the tip credit. My first job many, many years ago was as a bellhop, and I was paid below the minimum wage because I was supposedly going to get tips. I never received a tip the whole time I worked at that because, for one thing, people carried their own bags. Anyway, actually many years later, I filed a complaint against the employer and received back wages. And so the tip credit is a difficult issue because, as you say, there are some employees who may be classified as tip employees when, in fact, they're not. On the other hand, Hawaii's minimum wage for tip earners is substantially higher than most of the rest of the country. The federal tip credit hasn't changed in many, many years. I think originally it was about 50% of the minimum wage was the wage that would be received by tip earners. The other issue that I wanted to briefly jump in on is this issue of the cost of living. It is absolutely true that one of the reasons why a minimum wage increase will not likely damage businesses as much as we might think is because when everybody is subject to the same set of rules, prices do go up. And it does tend to show up most in things like menu prices, so food, restaurant food. But when you look at how big the minimum wage increase is, let's say so you take a 10% increase in the minimum wage, nationally that would represent something like 0.1% of the total labor bill for the entire country. So it's such a small effect on the whole cost of doing business that you will not see large effects on Hawaii's cost of living from a 10% increase, maybe even a 20%. I tend to agree with Sherry that, when you start getting up into 10% a year for 3 or 4 years, you're starting to get outside of the range of what we have experience with. right? I think some of the biggest increases that we've seen were the 07, 08, 09 increases. And so I think there does need to be some care, maybe spreading out the increases over a larger number of years.
I might add, the businesses have enjoyed this minimum wage of $7.25 for since 2007. So all this time, they haven't had to raise the wage. So saying it's a steep increase now, well, that's what happens if you let this languish for 7-8 years. And that's one of the reasons we support indexing future increases in the minimum wage to the consumer price index, so our workers don't lose buying power for 8 years, essentially taking a pay cut. It's worth less and less. Their $7.25 that they got in 2007 will have the buying power of $5.73. It's projected for 2016. So if anything, the CPI is an opportunity to make this a bit more predictable, because then there aren't these abrupt shifts where we all go back to the legislature, advocate hard for our positions, and have this conversation year in and year out.
All right, we're going to go to Kim from Kauai, and then Sherry, I want to have you have a chance to talk back to both Jenny and Carl just a little bit. Kim, calling us from Kauai, thanks for your patience.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
I'm kind of coming at this from a naive standpoint, but while I do support an increase in the minimum wage, I was curious, what about the incentive for another avenue of employees when they're at one business for so long that business has to pay, you know, if they've, after they're there for 1 year, that they are entitled to an increase in payment, a certain percentage every year that they're with that employer?
Okay, so you're saying that if someone is newly hired and they really, this person perhaps hasn't proven him or herself, that there may not be the merit to give them that increase? Is that what you're concerned about?
Well, no, I'm just saying, I know that when I lived in San Francisco, there was a law that after 1 year of working with your employer, you got a percentage, you know, your salary was raised for every 365 days that you worked for that employer.
Okay, well, that's not necessarily part of the conversation about minimum wage, as I read it, Carl.
I just didn't know if that was an alternative thought.
I think there have been proposals. I'm not certain, and I don't think I've heard it here, but proposals for an entry level wage, right? So, or maybe some people might propose that. Teenagers, for example, might have a multi-tiered system. I don't think that's been discussed in Hawaii for some time, but I'm not certain about that.
Okay, I see. I mean, I was trying to stick with the minimum. I strongly believe the minimum wage is, it's definitely something that's important. But I was just thinking of alternatives. If I was still giving people, you know, employees a reason to stay at their job and to move up from the minimum wage that they're making.
All right, Kim, thanks very much for calling. Well, and most businesses would like to have good, stable, reliable, productive employees. And part of how you say thank you to your employee is by the benefits and the working conditions and certainly the salary. So you've heard some of the arguments, Sherry, that both Carl and Jenny have made over the last little while here. And you talk to a great many businesses, not only businesses that would be engaged in hospitality where there might be a tip, but others as well. Is this lumping too much into one conversation?
Well, I think, you know, once again, you know, I respect Carl's and Jenny's arguments so far. But I go back to businesses and what they can afford. It's not that they enjoy paying at the minimum wage. There's a lot of businesses, if they have an opportunity to pay more, they will. Or if they can pay more benefits, they will. I go back to my mom's example, her small business. She took away some of her health care benefits so she could cover additional benefits for her staff.
But that may be because your mom's a good person, but what if somebody else isn't?
Right. And in Hawaii, I would think that businesses across the state do take care of the employees. We hear it from our members. And going back to the purchasing part, I go back to my 10-person shop, $57,000. Let's say that's an ice cream shop. Sure, businesses can increase the cost of the goods, what they're selling, but at some point they can't sell a $5 ice cream cone at $20. I'm just using that as an example. At some point, they have to limit how much they raise. Everything else they absorb. And so it's not as simple as just increasing, passing it down to the consumers.
So her point seems to be almost the inverse of yours, Jenny, that at a certain point, the ability to charge is not going to be something that the market's going to bear any more than, as you were talking about a moment ago, what someone may be paid at minimum wage will be able to buy them the same amount of goods that they would need to be able to live in and just have basics. It seems that these are opposite ends of almost the same argument. How do we meet in the middle?
Well, I think it's certainly true that there is an upper limit. Obviously, if we increase the minimum wage to $100, then there's all sorts of distorting effects on that. But I think that the research, and this is where I'm defer to Carl that the cost increases are not going to be commensurate with the price increases are not going to be commensurate with those and drive them up so much that the increase to the minimum wage is going to make it more difficult to make ends meet. Those households are still going to be better off. So I think that, again, the price is not, I think that's not a compelling argument. People need to be able to put food on the table. We're not going to see the price of food, a box of cereal go up to $40 because they have to pay a worker $10.10 an hour.
All right, we have more callers on the line. If you'd like to join us, call us now, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Carl, very briefly, would you like to answer her?
Well, I think the thing that I think we're kind of missing here is just how big the changes are. And at least in the academic research on the minimum wage, when you look at And the research, the growing research that's saying, okay, well, if this doesn't cause job losses, then why not? Okay, that's an important question. So if the research is telling us that we're not going to destroy a bunch of low-wage jobs by raising the cost of hiring them, then why not? And the best research that I've seen says that there's a whole variety of different ways that businesses make adjustments. And it varies from business to business. So one way they make adjustments is they raise prices. And another way they make adjustments, some of them will have lower profits, right? So their profits, they may accept lower profits. So they may decide, okay, well, I'm going to cut my salary as an employer.
Like Sherry's mother did.
Right. And one of the big ways is that you see these really fairly large decreases in turnover, fairly large improvement in retention. And then there was a really interesting paper that studied about 90 restaurants in Georgia and Alabama, and they surveyed the business owners before and after minimum wage changes, and they not only found that earnings went up, and there were no job losses, partly because the businesses didn't want to let people go, right? They wanted to protect their workers. What they found was that the businesses basically use this as a mechanism to try and improve efficiency and to get more out of their workers. And another adjustment mechanism is to slow the rate of growth of people at higher wages. So the people who are earning well above minimum wage may see their wages not go up, partly in compensation. So the point is that it's a very complicated issue. Running a business is complicated, and there's lots of different adjustments. And part of the issue is that a 10% increase in the wage is just not that large of a piece of the overall cost of running most businesses. It may be for some, and maybe those may be uniquely impacted, but for the typical business, it's not. And most of this research is done on restaurants and fast food chains and things like that to focus on those types of businesses.
But once again, the other states don't have prepaid health care, and that is a significant cost to employers. And it goes up every year, 7 to 10%. And while maybe some employers will not cut jobs, they may cut back hours and benefits and limit the hiring of new employees. So overall, that could impact not only a certain level of employees, but all employees.
All right, we've got callers on the line. It's lighting up. So if you want to talk to our panel tonight, you better call soon, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to Mike calling us from Waipahu Aloha, Mike, and thanks for your patience.
Hello, people. Thank you for having me.
Sure. Go ahead.
What I wanted to add to the conversation was I feel like there's not enough responsibility being put on the worker to negotiate wages and get a job that'll support themselves.
Well,
why doesn't that show up in this conversation?
Well, you bring up an interesting point, but for people who are at the lowest end of the wage continuum, if they don't have but certain skills, are they qualified for other jobs? That may or may not be the case for people who are working for fast food restaurants or others.
I feel like in most places that'll be a valid point, but over here in Hawaii, most of our jobs are service jobs. So the people who are accepting these jobs at $7.25 an hour are kind of bringing the rest of us down. And then we got to supplement their income.
Okay, well, we'll see what our panel has to say. Thanks very much for your patience, Mike, and for joining in on the conversation.
I mean, his point is,
what if
is well taken.
Said,
I mean, the difficulty of getting – I mean, basically, if you want to earn above a living wage in Hawaii, you need more skills and you need a better education and so on. So raising the minimum wage by itself is not the solution to poverty and to below living wages. It's a multifaceted approach, and it needs to include worker training, access to community colleges, better transportation so that people are able to get to jobs in the city, all kinds of things. And it could just as well include changes in tax policy. I believe there have been some discussions about exempting food from the excise tax or exempting rents from the excise tax.
Or people at certain levels of income. Yeah.
And, so it's not just one. There shouldn't just be one approach.
We have a shy caller who just phoned, so let's give him a quick answer. The percentage of those in Hawaii making minimum wage?
2.2%.
It's like 2.2% mm-hmm. of the total workforce, about 14,000 people. About half of them are women, maybe more than that. And about 85% of them are not teenagers.
Would you happen to know how many are in the tipped category?
I don't know that.
All right. Well, at least that gave you a basis. Thanks very much for the call.
Well, there's about 7,000 of them earn less than the minimum wage. So it's at least not more than 7,000, I think.
Because I believe in one of the hearings said, I think 80% are above 21 years old. But when we looked at some numbers between 21 and 24 years old, majority of them were in the tip industry.
Right.
But when you put them into everybody else, that's what, less than half?
Of the tipped employees between 21 and 24 years old.
In that group only. But if you look at that whole 14,000 people who are making minimum wage, you're saying that's maybe half of those would not be in the tipped category.
Well, about half of them are earning less than
the minimum
wage. So it's possible that those people would be in the tipped category.
Okay, clearly we just don't know, have an answer to that one. But what we can tell you, about 2% or about 14,000 people who are making minimum wage in Hawaii. Thanks very much for the call. All right, going on now to our other list of callers, Joanne, who's been waiting patiently and is calling us from Waimanalo. Aloha. Thanks for your patience.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a small business owner, and a lot of the workers that I have are girls that are in high school or just beginning their first year of college with no skills, first jobs. So, for me, I agree that that Hawaii, it's time that we have an increase in minimum wage. I just don't think the steep increase is going to help me. I mean, it would certainly have to change the way that I do business. I don't think I can afford to pay girls that make smoothies and take food orders. It's not a highly skilled job, $10 an hour.
Well, you're talking about high school students or, teenagers who are first year of college, so maybe they would be out of the minor group. But so that might open up the conversation whether teens should be paid a different wage than someone who is having to support him or herself. Because clearly you're not having to pay prepaid health care benefits for someone who's working for you if they're a minor. They're being covered by their parents or some other way, true?
Some are, yes. But by the time they get to, most of them, like, for instance, now I have 17 employees, and most of them who are in their first year of college are still covered under their parents, which definitely helps. But, you know, as Sherry said, even with the wage increase, workman's comp, all of that totally affects my business, you know. And
do you have any idea how much that would actually increase the average minimum wage worker that you have with, obviously, you don't have to do the prepaid health care because they're covered by their parents, but for all the other pieces of payments that you have to make for workman's comp and the rest of it, do you have any idea how much per worker that would be?
In terms of if the
minimum wage were to increase, if the minimum wage were to increase, it would be not just that amount that you would be paying your worker, but all the other assorted costs that you'd have to pay, whatever might be associated with that you have with every worker, with the exception of prepaid health care. Do you have any idea of how much per worker that would be that you'd be looking at?
I don't. I mean, I'm driving right now, so but I have to sit down and do the math on that. But it's all percentage-based, so it's all based on total wages, total gross wages.
So you don't know yet, really, if what that picture would look like if the minimum wage were to increase at all.
No, but I mean, I'm sure if it went up to $10, it would be somewhat substantial.
Sherry, do you have any information on that for an average worker if she doesn't have to pay for prepaid health care?
Well, not without prepaid health care, but I know when you incorporate payroll taxes for the current $7.25, it's almost up to $10.87 per hour, but that incorporates prepaid and payroll, but it doesn't incorporate work comp, TDI, and all the other mandated benefits that employers are required to pay.
What percentage of an average salary do all those other associated costs come out to be?
What percentage?
Yep.
Well, this is based on a minimum wage earner.
Which is approximately what part of that? So for a minimum wage earner who's now earning
$7.25.
But that doesn't cover TDI or workman's comp or some of those other issues that unfortunately show up on your bottom line.
So if you add up all those other costs.
Right.
So it must be a number
higher than $10.87, obviously.
Yeah.
So
but probably 40 to 50%. I don't know, but... Mm-hmm. Do you have a total for what the extra costs are? Because you have like $3 and something an hour for the health care.
Right. Not for the TDI, work comp, unemployment insurance, and the other mandated benefits. No.
All right. We're going to take some more callers. And going next to Pat calling us from Honolulu.
Oh, hi there. Thanks for taking my call. My question has sort of been addressed previously with other callers, but mine is one of motivation. It seems like if we're increasing the minimum wage for entry-level jobs, that some people can find themselves staying there a bit longer and lose the motivation to pursue college degrees, graduate degrees, become doctors, lawyers, what have you, and it takes away from the degrees that are already out there. People that have invested, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars to become doctors. Granted, they're better off, and they're not, you know, they're not hurting to put food on their table, but it takes away from those individuals that have put in that time. I'll take some comments.
I'm really having a problem following your logic there, because if you've got somebody who is working at minimum wage and they are having to ostensibly spend everything that they're making, then that may not give them the opportunity to be paying for an education the same way that somebody who is able to pay for an education and isn't looking at being involved with a minimum wage job.
Yeah. And it seems like maybe we're thinking about two different populations of minimum wage workers, right? The one is the teenagers that we've talked about, who are in the process of forming their careers and finding what pursuit path they want to go down.
Yeah, you're talking about the difference between a first job and someone who may only have a skill set that allows him or her to have that job. And you're right on that one. Those would be two different populations. And why we've had some conversation in past years about perhaps having a two-tier system for someone who is clearly a teen who's working at a first job as opposed to somebody who is working at a minimum wage job to be able to put food on the table. Jenny, jump in here to this conversation
sure.
a little bit.
Well, first of all, I really want to emphasize 85% are over the age of 21. And even for the percent that are teenagers, we don't know all of their circumstances. Many youth work to help support their family. What if that teenager is saving for college? Are we going to look at that negatively? So I think first there's both the misunderstanding of who the vast majority of minimum wage workers are, as well as a dismissiveness of the circumstances for teenagers who might be working. I'd also say even the bill with the highest increase out there, up to $10.10, what President Obama has been advocating for. Governor Abercrombie's original bill as well was up to $10, raising the minimum wage to $10. Who here can tell me that that's a luxurious lifestyle that you would be happy with for the rest of your life? If you want a family, can you raise a family on that? Can you put yourself through school on that? Will you have a nice car? Will you take a vacation? Will you get to even eat out at Zippy's a couple times a month? I mean, truly, I don't see how people would be motivated to still have a just stay in that job unless there were other factors at work. Like you mentioned, that there could be issues that they don't have a skill set. Some people, we need those critical service workers. Our tourism economy, we rely on that. So begrudging those people who are working hard simply doesn't make sense, and expecting that they just want to stagnate. No, they're putting in a full day's work, working hard.
They're working out of necessity is your bottom line.
Absolutely. No, and necessity for our economy, too.
And necessity, whether they're a teen, perhaps, or not a teen. I mean, you're making a point that there are those who are working because they have to help their family. And how far into their business are we going to poke when we're looking at whether or not they're working? Okay, point made. Going to move on now and go to Stan calling us from Eva. Aloha, Stan.
Aloha. You know, this is not really tongue-in-cheek. It's a true thing. But what has happened over time for me as a small businessman is because of the nature of the business that I will hire people at the minimum wage and give them the benefits. But as minimum wage and the other kind of costs have increases associated with the base pay, that it has forced me in an interesting way, and I think it's even occurring, it's already occurring business-wise, but that I have automated much of that the function of these employees, so my costs actually drop. So as we're bringing employee costs up, interesting, there's an evolution that has occurred, and has occurred in for me is I've been able to decrease costs, letting employees go. It's sad because the high touch is always good, but I just can't afford the increasing costs, and so I've let them go. But in fact, if this bill goes through, and I think it probably will, then I've already notified one of the employees that I'm going to cut back on her hours, and the kind of job that I hire allows them to gain skills in which they will eventually leave me and actually can get a higher wage elsewhere because they're more trained. So you know, that would be the other side, that I'm not begrudging the increase in the minimum wage to a large degree, but it's forced me to evolve and to automate what the minimum wage...
Right. So, Stan, you seem to be making Sherry's point on some of that, that in fact, you know, on one hand, sort of what you give on one hand, you have to take on the other to be able to keep your costs down.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much for the call. Going to go on now to Larry calling us from the McCauley area. Aloha, Larry. Thanks for your patience.
Well, thank you for this program. My thought on this was, and Stan makes my point almost for me in what he's had to do. Why not, instead of, say, a $2, I don't know the exact increase they're talking about, but if it was a $2 increase, why not take the burden away from the owner of the business and cut that in half and give them an equal tax credit or a tax deduction of $1 and only put the burden of $1 on the business owner? Then we wouldn't have people like Stan having to let people go. Because Stan, like, I like what he said about these people will be moving up to a higher level eventually. Why not support them now and make their life bearable and easier so that they can climb faster and achieve a higher level sooner, because they're going to be in a higher tax bracket, which will help everybody in the
long
run.
Right. So, Larry, you're talking about using this as, a way to create some sort of a learning culture for those who are at certain jobs that might be paying minimum wage. Carl, he's also bringing in tax issues,
too. To some extent, earned income tax credit already does that.
Right.
And, you wouldn't want to sort of create a new way to do it when you've already got one way to do it, to essentially subsidize work, which is then a subsidy of employers.
And when you start to have subsidies on top of subsidies on top of subsidies, we know who's paying for those subsidies.
Well, yeah. The last caller, the previous caller, mentioned reducing hours, and that is certainly a response that some employers will take. And yet the employee could actually still end up being better off. It depends on how much the hours are reduced, right? I mean, if you have a 20% increase in your wage and your hours are reduced by 10%, you're still better off. Even if your hours are reduced to the point where your wage doesn't change, you're collecting the same salary. You're just working fewer hours. It's kind of hard to say that makes the employee worse off, right? And the key there, and he actually raised it, was that each business is different, and they have to figure out how to adjust and how to increase their productivity or increase the productivity of their workers.
All right, we'll take one last very quick call. Paul calling us from Maui very quickly. You had a question?
Yeah, just real quickly. My question is around the importance of people organizing to get at least whatever it is, $13, $14, $15 an hour, because corporations like Walmart and Target and Kmart and Minute Stops and gas stations, they're not going to pay that, And so I'm wondering, my question is for the people there, how important they think it is that people begin to think about organizing.
Okay, we're going to stop you right there, because part of the conversation that is turning in this way is asking the question, what's the role of unions in all of this, and is this going to be another way in which people get involved with movements. We saw one that happened earlier in the fall with restaurants and minimum wage workers who were out in force around the country. Didn't really happen here. Very quickly, Carl, is this another opportunity for unions? Or really is that a specious argument?
I don't know. I'm not sure if what the position is of the unions, but they're not typically thought of as minimum wage jobs. So I'm not sure if they've already taken a position. And I'm certainly not advocating for anything. I'm just trying to describe what
is. We did talk to Eric Gill about this and ask him, why we didn't see those restaurants here, those fast food places coming out in force as we sort of saw in places over on the mainland. And his point seemed to be, there's very high turnover. It's very tough for people to organize. And that was pretty much, where he left it.
If I may add,
quickly,
he mentioned large corporations, but Hawaii has more 80% small business. And it's these small businesses that are going to undertake this huge, steep increases. So the question is, can they absorb these costs in order to stay afloat?
And that's the question that we're going to leave you with. Sherry Manor McNamara, thank you for being here. Jenny Lee and Carl Bonham, we appreciate you coming in, and we'll have another conversation about all this, because this conversation about the minimum wage is far from over. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Thanks for joining us for Town Square. I'll see you tomorrow morning right here at 8 o'clock for the conversation. Meantime, have a good evening. Aloha.